Blog Talk Radio. Morning. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. Of course, this is where we are every Friday morning. And again, thank you all for chilling with me today. The weekend is here, people. The weekend is upon us. Sometimes it's a little iffy long about Wednesday or Thursday. We don't know if we're going to make it, but here we are. And of course, it's been an incredibly busy week, well, exciting week, I guess, maybe for, maybe a little more so for Catholics and non-Catholics, but very interesting, very exciting, and, just a lot of stuff going on. And, of course, as usual, I've got a big stack of stuff here to talk about today and get into, and so let's do it. Let's get into it. And, of course, the chat room is open, and you can go there and chat with moi, and you can also call in here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. So let's get into it. Let's kick it. Of course, the biggest thing, I think, you know, everybody has been talking about the Pope's visit here this week to the United States. And, I think he got overshadowed a little bit this morning by Speaker of the House, John Boehner. He announced this morning that he will be stepping down at the end of next month, at the end of October, not just from his speakership, but also from Congress. He is going to step down from his congressional seat. And there are a lot of mixed feelings and mixed reactions to all of this. There are a lot of people who are jumping up and down and dancing in the streets because, they don't think that that John Boehner has put up much of a fight against Barack Obama and his agenda. And I happen to be one of those people. I think that John Boehner, and I think along with Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, I think that they, let's just say because this is a family show and it is the middle of the day, it is the family hour. Let's just say that neither one of them have displayed a lot of, let's call it testicular fortitude now, shall we? They seem to be steering the Republican Party into a Democrat-like, Democrat 2.0 kind of mode. And there are staunch conservatives that don't want to see that. They don't want that to happen. And there is a lot of frustration on the part of a lot of I don't want to use the term hardcore because that, you know, it makes it seem so hardcore, you know, they're hardcore and they're not going to move for anybody. So I hate to use that term, but traditional, maybe, conservatives is a better way to soften it up. There are a lot of those who are saying, bye, see ya, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And, there are several names being tossed about as possible replacements. And this is also coming, too, before there's going to be a vote on a continuing resolution next week. And that's going to decide whether or not the government gets shut down for any period of time, be it a day or a week, a month, you know, what have you. I'm also one of those people who thinks that government shutdowns are not necessarily a bad thing, because when the government is shut down, more often than not, that usually means that they are not in your business. They're not in your life trying to tweak and tinker and screw around with every little aspect of your everyday life. So I personally don't think it's a bad thing. But, you know, there's a big, you know, Republicans in Congress are all in a wad because they don't want to get blamed for this. Because, of course, the media always goes on when there is a government shutdown. Regardless of what happens because of that, to cause that, we know it's always Republicans' fault. That's, you know, that's a given. And so he is, this is going on next week, this vote, and a lot of it is contingent upon, there's, again, a lot of traditional conservatives, traditional Republicans, they want Planned Parenthood defunded in the wake of these horrific, disturbing videos that have come out about some of the things that go on at some of these Planned Parenthood clinics. That there are a lot of traditional conservatives in Congress, not just in the House but in the Senate, that want Planned Parenthood defunded. They do not want Planned Parenthood to get one more dime of government money, your money and my money. And, you know, whether you're for or against that is another topic for another day. Personally, I'm fine with that. If you don't want to fund Planned Parenthood, that's fine. Let them get their money from other sources. So that's not a problem for me. But and there's enough conservatives, let's use that term. There's enough traditional conservatives in Congress that are willing to shut down the government over this. And we know how that's going to get spun by the media. Those wacky extreme right wingers who only care about one thing. They only care about abortion and defunding Planned Parenthood, and so they're willing to shut down the government over that. That's going to be the spin. We know that. But so he's kind of he's getting out. Well, he's going to be there until the end of October. But here's the thing: with him announcing this today, that makes him a lame duck from now until the time that he walks out the door. So I have a report here, of course, from Newsmax, and what they say is that he is in this report. It says that John Boehner is now free to ignore the demands of rank and file Republicans who do say they're willing to shut down the government over funding of Planned Parenthood, and he will be able to schedule a vote on this. Excuse me, next week, and also the Senate will be voting on it, and enough Democrats should vote to avoid a government shutdown. Do that, then the CR, the continuing resolution, will shift to December. That would be when any short-term funding would expire. And again, there are a lot of mixed reactions to this. Some of the names that are being talked about as possible replacements, the number one on the list would be Kevin McCarthy of California. He is the number two behind Boehner. And also Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, although Ryan says that he is not interested. He is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. There are a couple of long shot choices here. They include possibly Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State. She ranks fourth in the Republican leadership. Peter Roskam of Illinois, and he had lost the election for Republican whip. That is the third ranking congressional position. He's also being talked about. There's a couple of dark horses, you know, even further out than the people I just mentioned here. Financial Services Committee Chairman Jeb Hensarling of Texas. Pete Sessions, also of Texas, and Dan Webster of Florida. He challenged Boehner in January and got only 12 votes to challenge John Boehner's speakership back in January. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and see there's always names that come up that you know are never talked about until you're in the thick of it, until you're in the thick of the fight and deciding who's going to be the successor. So I think probably maybe some names that people aren't even thinking of will probably come up as well. Representative Thomas Massie from Kentucky has criticized John Boehner's leadership. He's accused him of forcing members to vote his way. And the quote from Congressman Massie is, quote, "The American people can see what is happening here." And he says that John Boehner's election as Speaker back in January was, quote, a farce. While on the other side of that coin, you have people like Representative Peter King of New York, who is quoted as saying, "I'm very disappointed. It's a victory for the crazies." Isn't that nice? "I understand why he did it, but I don't agree." Representative King says he believes that Kevin McCarthy is the most likely successor. So you have those people who, like Peter King, who, and you know, I tend to look at Peter King myself as a rhino, and I think he's a walking example of the fact that he is a representative from New York State. When you're a Republican in New York, it's very different from being a Republican in, oh, Nebraska, Missouri, places like that. I think it's a very different animal. And so, you know, I would expect maybe a statement like that from somebody like Peter King. The fact that he would call people who are opposed to John Boehner's speakership crazies, you know, you're not helping things. You're not helping two factions of the Republican Party, you know, find some common ground. Because, well, I could go off on a tangent here and go off on a rant, but we're talking about John Boehner here. So let's do that. This really was kind of nobody really had seen this coming. This has really been kind of a surprise this morning of John Boehner's resignation. And a couple other quotes here. This is Representative David Jolly from Florida. Quote, "The honor of John Boehner today is in sharp contrast to the idiocy of those in the conference who seek to divide us." Really? You're calling people idiots, but then you're complaining about those quote, idiots, air quotes, who are seeking to divide you. Really? I don't know if I'm the only one who sees a little irony in that quote or... another one, this is from Representative John Mica, who is also a Florida Republican, was quoted as saying that Speaker Boehner does not want to become the issue. Well, here's the fact. The fact is that he's already become the issue with his constant caving to the president. And, again, a lot of people are seeing this as caving to President Obama's agenda. There's been, and I just wrote about this recently too over at Conservative Cauldron blog. Where are the conservatives? You see people all over the place talking about conservatism, writing about conservatism, going on TV and the internet and anywhere else that you care to mention, going to all of these outlets to talk about conservatism. But where in Washington has it been being practiced lately? We don't see that, and that's what people are hacked off about. That's what they're fed up about. And this report also goes on to say that John Boehner, who is 65, he is Ohio Republican, I believe. I could be wrong. I believe he represents the 8th district in Ohio. I want to say 8th or 12th. Ohio people can correct me. He was elected to Congress in 1990. Okay, right there, that's part of the problem. The idea that somebody could hold the same seat like that for, what are we talking, 24 years, 25 years, that's part of the problem. It's about 20 years too long. And I think a lot of people are of that opinion, that maybe we really do need to start looking at term limits maybe a little bit more closely. A lot of people, I've heard the argument, well, one of the reasons for elections, That's a term limit. One of the reasons you have an election is that's the term limit. Well, yes, in a way it is, but I don't believe that the framers of the Constitution when they designed the term limits of House members and Senate members, I don't think that they foresaw people making this a lifelong endeavor. I think they saw this as people would leave their homes and they would come to Washington to represent the people of their district for 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, what have you, maybe even 8 or 10, and then they would try to get reelected maybe once or twice, maybe 3 times, and then they would go home and they would go back to the private sector and they would go back to what they were doing prior to being elected to Congress. And more often than not, that's not the case. People get to Washington. Washington is somewhat is some sort of twisted magnet, because once people get there, they stay there and they never want to leave. There used to be an old Saturday Night Live skit from back in the 70s, and it was called The Thing That Wouldn't Leave, and John Belushi would be the thing, that the person that would come to people's parties and he would never leave. That's who a lot of these people are starting to be. They're the things that wouldn't leave. And again, it's part of the problem. But it's going to be really interesting, maybe starting next week, to see who, not only to see who comes up, because now obviously if Speaker Boehner is going to give up his congressional seat as well, there will be a special election in Ohio, and every state is different, so I don't know exactly how it works there, if it happens immediately, if it remains an empty seat until the next election. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see who runs for that seat, if it's anybody with any national name recognition as opposed to statewide in Ohio. It'll be interesting to see how many names come up for consideration to succeed John Boehner. And, again, it's just going to be another little side thing, you know, besides presidential politics and things like that, that geeks like me just love. Woohoo! We can't wait. But, of course, the other thing that is very big news this week is the visit by the Pope to the United States. And, I think whether you are a Catholic or not, it's interesting. It's fascinating to watch people's reactions and people's reactions to the things that he says, and just watching the whole scenario, the whole situation play out. It's kind of fascinating to watch. And, of course, the Pope started his trip here to this side of the pond, shall we say. He started out earlier this week, I believe back on Sunday, in Cuba, and which is very interesting because Cuba being a communist nation, when you're a communist nation, the leaders of that communist nation, whether it's Cuba, whether it's China, whether it's, previously Russia, whatever it is, they really are not fond of any sort of religion, any sort of organized religion. They want the state to be your religion. They want government to be your religion. And for someplace like Cuba that is so staunchly Catholic, the majority of people who live in Cuba are so staunchly Catholic, that's not going to happen. So people like the Flying Castro Brothers and leaders of communist nations, I think what they realize when you have a populace like the population in Cuba, they realize that they are just going to have to kind of tolerate it because it's not going anywhere. And, of course, the Pope was greeted by huge throngs of people in Cuba. And maybe one of the things that you did not hear about the Pope's visit to Cuba, I believe he was there from Sunday till maybe early Tuesday morning until he was on his way here to the United States, was that there were a lot of political dissidents who were initially invited to go to the Pope's mass. I believe it was an open-air mass in Cuba, and at the last minute, these people were denied entrance to the mass, and as a matter of fact, a lot of them, maybe the minute they stepped out of their houses, there were people from the government there trying to prevent them from going, and in fact did so. But I'm going to take a little short break here, and we are going to talk about that. And, of course, we will talk about the Pope's address to Congress yesterday. And, of course, as always, a ton more. So don't go anywhere. Stick around. I am going to be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio, TGIF. Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on this wonderful, beautiful Friday morning. TGIF people, the weekend is upon us. And as always, we have got a lot of stuff to talk about today to get to. And of course, the big news this morning was the announcement that Speaker of the House, John Boehner, will be stepping down at the end of next month. Not only will he be stepping down from his role as Speaker of the House, but he will also be relinquishing his congressional seat as a representative from Ohio. So that's going to be interesting to watch. And, of course, we have the visit to the United States this week by Pope Francis. And I was just saying that you know, even if you are not a Catholic, that it's just really an interesting, fascinating thing to watch. Watch people's reactions, watch the interactions, you know, listen to the things that the Pope says, because a lot of his, well, he's different from a lot of his successors. He has a lot of worldviews, I think, that on certain issues that are quite different and possibly a little less conservative, for lack of a better term, than his predecessors. And he's made some waves lately. And prior to his arrival here in the United States, of course, he made a two-day visit to Cuba. And one of the things maybe that you did not hear about in the mainstream media, there's a shock, things you don't hear about in the mainstream media, was the fact that there were some political dissidents in Cuba who were initially invited to hear the Pope speak when he was in Cuba. And almost right before the Pope was scheduled to speak, that these people were prevented from hearing his speech. And for people, not only for the president, but for people in the Obama administration who think that things like that are going to change because we are in the process of normalizing relations with them, yeah, think again. That's not going to happen. This is a report from the UK Telegraph, which I've said it several times, that some of the best places to get unbiased news really are British newspapers, because, you know, they're like our own press, that some of them do lean right and they do lean left. But when it comes to American politics, a lot of the times they really are pretty well balanced, because they don't have a dog in the hunt. But this is a report from the UK Telegraph, and two well-known dissidents, Marta Beatriz Roque and Miriam Leyva, had been invited by the Vatican to attend a Vespers service led by the Pope in Havana, but they were detained by security agents and barred from attending the event. Marta Beatriz Roque's, her quote here is that, quote, "They told me that I didn't have a credential and that I couldn't go to the Pope's event that was taking place there in the plaza of the cathedral." She went on to say that she and Ms. Leyva had been invited, again by the Vatican, to meet Pope Francis at the residence of the Holy See's ambassador to Cuba shortly after the pontiff's arrival on Saturday, that would be last Saturday, but that they were also detained on that occasion as well. They were not allowed to meet the Pope, as was previously told to them. The head of an opposition group called the Ladies in White also said that 22 of the 24 members of the group who had hoped to attend the Mass celebrated by the Pope were prevented from doing so by Cuban security officials. And again, there was a lot of speculation when the Pope was in Cuba about whether or not that he was going to risk ticking off the Flying Castro brothers by insisting on meeting with some of their political opponents, but that did not appear to be the case. And the fact that the Vatican had invited these dissidents to the service given by Pope Francis, they were saying that it was a determination on the part of the Pope to try to engage with the dissident movement, but apparently that did not take place. It says here, as the ceremony got underway, Cuban security officers detained at least three people who appeared to be trying to distribute leaflets as well in the capital's Revolution Square, which is a large open area square, and it has a lot of pictures of people like Che Guevara and people of that nature. All three of these people were tackled and dragged away by security officers. And of course, political opponents are regularly subjected to harassment and intimidation and murder and things of that nature by the Flying Castro brothers. And again, I don't know who thinks that is going to change. But in the latest report on Cuba by Human Rights Watch, says, of course, that the Castro government, quote, continues to repress dissent and discourage public criticism. And there were a lot of high hopes among many average Cubans that the Pope's visit would spur the regime on towards enacting maybe some reforms and granting greater freedoms. The average monthly wage in Cuba right now today is a whopping $25. Again, not going to happen. But the message and the service that was given by the Pope in Cuba was mainly a spiritual one, and really was not political in any way. And the Pope did meet with Fidel Castro while he was in Cuba, and they exchanged gifts. I believe they gave each other there were books exchanged by the Pope and by Fidel Castro. And I think a lot of people expected him to address a lot of the treatment of political opponents in Cuba, and apparently he didn't want to disappoint his hosts, and so a lot of that did not go on, and that's unfortunate, because you would think that things like human rights and freedom of speech and the freedom to speak out would be high on the Pope's list, but he appears to get political to a point, and then he kind of backs off. But of course, yesterday he addressed Congress. He addressed a joint session of Congress yesterday, and while the Pope has been here, he has seemed to have been lecturing Americans a lot. He has been lecturing us all a lot on things like wealth redistribution and things like climate change, and apparently capitalism is one of the causes of climate change. I would have to disagree with His Holiness on that issue, and I think a lot of people, I think maybe a lot of Catholics also disagree with him on that. But he did, while he was speaking with Congress, he did speak on those things. One of the things he said was that America's power and wealth should be used to serve humanity. I'm not sure where he would get the idea that we have not served humanity. And he also called for a more equitable economy, greater effort against climate change, and an end to the death penalty globally. And he also addressed the topic of immigration, specifically a lot of these Syrian refugees now that are pouring into Europe. And he got a lot of applause, of course, from the Democrats on that issue. And his quote on that was that, quote, "We must not be taken aback by their numbers, but rather view them as persons, seeing their faces and listening to their stories, trying to respond as best we can to their situation." Well, here's the thing with that. There's several things about this, really. As far as immigration goes, I don't know if the Pope is aware of, while he's lecturing Americans on economics, I'm not sure that he is aware of the actual economic situation right here in the United States right now. We have roughly 94 million Americans that are unemployed. A lot of those 94 million Americans have just simply left the workforce. They're not even looking for a job. We have roughly 47 to 50 million Americans on food stamps right now. And so it's a little hard to absorb a large number of immigrants, regardless of where they're coming from, based on those numbers. I think that a lot of Americans would say, well, maybe we need to take care of our own first. We need to take care of the people who are here first. We need to take care of our own economic problems and make sure that every American who is physically able to work and wants to work and can get a job. Because 94 million Americans out of work is a hell of a lot of people. And I don't know. Here's the thing, and I heard someone, it might have been Rush Limbaugh the other day, speak to this, is that if you look at this Pope, Pope Francis, and maybe one of his successors, let's say Pope John Paul. Pope John Paul II grew up in post-Nazi Poland. He grew up in a communist country, but he realized early on as a young man the evils of communism and that it was not helping anyone, that it was simply hurting people and oppressing them, and the leaders of that regime were like anywhere else, were murdering their opponents and you know, doing all sorts of horrible things. And he realized early on as a young man to denounce that and remove himself from that mentality, from that communist what's the word I'm looking for? It's, again, maybe mindset maybe is the best way to look at it. This Pope, he was the son of an Italian immigrant family to Argentina. So I get where immigration may be near and dear to his heart as the son of immigrants to a country himself. But when you look at someone like Pope John Paul, who learned early on in his life to denounce communism, to someone like Pope Francis, who grew up maybe someplace that was, well, let's just say a tad more socialistic, and maybe the thing is that because he did not grow up with capitalism, with an American Western form of capitalism, you know, could it be argued maybe that he really just doesn't understand it? I'm not trying to say that the Pope is not an intelligent man. I'm sure he is. But maybe it's one of those things that you have to grow up with it to realize and appreciate it. And before you start lecturing people on the evils of it. And again, he, in his speech, I did not hear the whole speech, so I'm not sure if he did this directly or not, but I think he, in a lot of ways, he implied that capitalism and global warming are very much related, that maybe a lot of aspects of capitalism are the cause of global warming. And again, maybe that goes back to the fact that he maybe doesn't have a basic understanding of capitalism. He knows this is somebody who grew up in the era of Evita and Juan Perón in Argentina. So, you know, maybe there's some basic things that lack understanding here on his part. I don't know. I'm throwing it out there. Another thing, too, that I think maybe was really disappointing to people here. Very quickly, as the Pope talked about immigration to Congress, there was a little bit of polling data here. This is a Reuters Ipsos poll from last week that shows that 30.5% of Americans think the Republican Party has the best approach to immigration, while 29.7% believe that Democrats have the best plan. Well, that's probably a statistical tie. But while the Pope had Democrats chanting and whooping and hollering about his immigration views, he did make some remarks that made the conservatives stand up and cheer. One of his quotes here was that, quote, fundamental relationships are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family. That was, of course, expressing an opposition to same-sex marriage. He also said, in reference to abortion and euthanasia, that humanity must, quote, protect and defend human life at every stage of its development. And one of the people there, of course, listening to the Pope's speech was Texas Republican Senator and presidential candidate Ted Cruz. And there was a really interesting quote from him. He said, quote, it was striking and heartbreaking to see so many congressional Democrats appearing stone-faced, arms crossed, when the Pope urged us all to defend human life. That's really kind of giving it to him and sticking it to him. Also, one of the things here, I was going to get to very quickly, and we're going to move on to something else, that one of the things that the Pope failed to address, and this was also very surprising to me, that the Pope failed to address anything regarding Iran and their nuclear perspirations. And not just, and to go along with that, there was no mention of four Americans being held in Iran by the Iranian regime. And I think that that was very surprising, very disappointing, of course, to a lot of people, that no one mentioned four American hostages, including American pastor Saeed Abedini, that there was no mention of them, no mention of their release. There is something in this report here that the Pope, I believe, has been working, trying to work with the Iranian regime on the release of all four of these people, but, you know, obviously that has not taken place as yet. And, of course, Pastor Saeed Abedini's wife, Naghmeh, did make a statement about this, that she was extremely disappointed that the Pope did not address this. And, you know, it seems like that he was so busy lecturing Americans on the evils of capitalism and how we're somehow responsible for global warming that he didn't find the time to address four Americans who are being held against their will in Iran. And seems like that maybe he should have brought that up. But moving on, also this week, before I get to that real quickly, the Pope today is addressing the members of the United Nations, and that will be interesting to hear bits and pieces and clips from his speech to the UN today. Will he continue to lecture Americans on American soil at the United Nations about global warming? You know, it didn't seem to stop him yesterday while he was addressing Congress. But earlier this week, GOP presidential candidate Ben Carson was asked, I believe, last weekend on one of the Sunday shows, a hypothetical question: would he support a Muslim candidate for president? And I'm going to paraphrase this, but basically what he said was that he did not believe that the Quran and the Constitution were compatible, that belief in both of those things were antithetical, one was antithetical to the other. And one of the quotes here from Dr. Carson was, quote, "When the situation arises and we have someone in that situation, we'll talk about it. Why get off into a theoretical situation? There's so many important issues. Why is it people are not interested in the important issues that are going on?" He said this during at a press conference this past Tuesday in Ohio. He also mentioned the refugee situation in Syria and problems going on with the American educational system. But he didn't back down from those beliefs, from those statements. And he said, quote, "They must place it above their personal beliefs. If you're not willing to do that, you should not be running for president." And however, while initially he did not back down, and he actually doubled down on these comments, that he did come back and say, quote, this was before he kind of clarified some of the things that he said. He said, quote, "I said I would support anyone regardless of their background if, in fact, they embrace American values and our Constitution and are willing to place that above their beliefs. But he said he could not back Muslims who embrace Sharia law, which is completely antithetical to Americanism, and he's absolutely right, it is. He also kind of slapped the media around about this was on Meet the Press last Sunday on NBC, about the PC culture that exists in America right now. And his quote on that was, quote, the only way we fix that is to fix the PC culture in our country, where people can listen to one narrative, and if it doesn't fit their philosophy, then they have to try to ascribe some motive to make it fit." He went on to say that the PC culture means that if a question isn't answered in a certain way, then the general idea of people, the media and their supporters, is, quote, "Let's attack and let's not try to actually understand what that person is saying." And you know, I think that a lot of people would agree with Dr. Carson and his views on this. You know, there's going to be people who bring up Article 6 of the Constitution, which says that there is not a religious test to to become president of the United States, and that's true. But I don't believe in this case that it's not a religious test. It's you can look at both things, the Quran and the Constitution, side by side, and they are going to tell opposite stories. They are going to be, they're going to be complete opposites and be the antithesis of one another. And if you are a Muslim and you are willing to denounce what the Quran says that as a Muslim you should believe, and you're going to put American values and American ideals and American traditions and the American Constitution above everything else, then we'll talk about that. But if you're not willing to do that, then I got to say, I agree with Dr. Carson, and I think that a lot of other people do too. And he's, again, it's this political correctness that is what's drawing so many people to Donald Trump, that he is completely turning it on its ear. And I think this is an instance where Dr. Carson is doing the same thing. And that's why his numbers are going up. It's why Trump's numbers are staying up, although I believe his numbers are a little bit down. I do have some numbers. If we can get to it today, we'll talk about it. But those are the things that are making people stand up and listen to people like Donald Trump and Ben Carson, because they are saying, to hell with political correctness. We don't care about political correctness. Here's what needs to be said. And so I hope that Dr. Carson keeps speaking out about things like this, because there are things that need to be said, and there are things that other people think, and maybe they're just afraid to say them. And maybe it takes presidential candidates to say, here's the deal. Whether you like it or not, here's the deal. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I am going to take a quick break, and I'll come right back, and we've still got a lot of other stuff to get to before we call it a day here. When we're talking about immigration, when the Pope was talking about immigration, when Dr. Carson was talking about Muslims and maybe Muslim immigrants specifically. I'll get to this story, just a little tease there for you. I'll get to this story, and we'll talk about it right after the break. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
Never before have I turned on you when you look too good to me. Your beady eyes think I cut me in two, and I just can't let you be. But it's a free for all, and a heart of sin, you can bet your life. Stakes are high, and so am I. In the air tonight. We'll be right back.
Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, for hanging with me on this Friday TGIF. Of course, we're talking about the Pope's visit here to the United States and a lot of interesting things going on with that. Of course, today, Speaker of the House John Boehner announced that he will be stepping down, not only as Speaker of the House, but also stepping down from his congressional seat, and that will be interesting in the days and weeks to come to see who will succeed him. And when the Pope was here, while the Pope is here, he has talked about immigration and how we should, be welcoming to people who want to come here as immigrants. But I have a story here. I believe this is from, this is from The Blaze. And in Jersey City, New Jersey, there was a pretty heated school board meeting lately. It appears that the a lot of the Muslim members of the community wanted the schools in Jersey City to close for Muslim holidays. And they wanted the school board to do this on about a 6-day notice. And when the school board told them no, well, of course, they yelled discrimination and, it's just, this is horrible. We're being, isolated and things of that nature. And there was a woman that stood up and said that, quote, we're going to be the majority soon. Are you going to take that as a threat? We're going to be the majority soon, so you better do this or else. And the thing that caught my eye about this story is that when you're talking about immigration, is this really the attitude that you want people who are immigrating to this country to have? And my first thought, one of my first thoughts when I saw this story was, and we say this a lot, in an offhanded kind of way in the middle of a conversation, but who do these people think they are? Who do you think you are that you can immigrate to this country and immediately tell us what to do, why to do it, how to do it, and how to live? If you are an immigrant, you are coming here because your desire is to be an American. Your desire is to live an American way of life. No one is telling you to give up the culture that you were born into, the culture that is part of your heritage. Absolutely not. By no means. Bring it with you. And we adopt portions of people's cultures all the time. Don't get to do is to come here and take over. That's not your role as an immigrant. Your role, should you decide to immigrate to the United States, is to come here and assimilate into American society and assimilate into our culture and have a desire to want to become an American. And when things like this are said by people who are immigrants to this nation, that tells me right away that you have no interest in becoming an American. You have no interest in assimilating into our society, into American society and American culture. What it says to me is American society and American culture is not good enough for you. Therefore, you're going to toss it out and put your own culture in place. And note to this woman who spoke to the Jersey City, New Jersey school board, that's not going to happen. Not just to her, but to anyone who's coming to this country as an immigrant, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And people better wake up to the possibility that of exactly who these people are and what they want to do. I'm not saying all Muslims. There are many, many Muslims who come here, who immigrate here to the United States and are very, very proud to become Americans and very, very proud to assimilate and adopt American culture and American society. Those aren't the people I'm talking about. They're the people who get up at school board meetings and say we're going to be the majority soon. And I mean, to me, that's a threat. We're going to be the majority soon, so you better do this or else. Those are the people I'm talking about. I did have some presidential polling numbers here, but I'm not going to have time to get to them today. But there is always another day for presidential polling numbers because very quickly here in this week's WTF segment. kind of a bittersweet thing. Baseball lost New York Yankees catcher and baseball icon Yogi Berra this week. We lost Yogi Berra this week. Yogi was 90 years old, and he lived a very full life by anyone's measure. And I guess the reason I wanted to talk about Yogi because, of course, he was a he was a hometown boy here. He was born and raised in St. Louis, and Yogi was born on May 12, 1925. He was the son of Pietro Berra, who was a laborer in a brickyard, and Pauline Berra, his mother. And Yogi grew up with another name you might know, Joe Garagiola. They grew up in a section of town here in St. Louis known as The Hill. And The Hill is it's an Italian neighborhood. It's full of Italian immigrants, the descendants of Italian immigrants, and it's a wonderful area of town. There's fabulous restaurants there, wonderful people that live there. And Yogi went on to win 10 World Series championships with the New York Yankees. And he coached for a while. He also, I didn't know this, Yogi Berra served on a gunboat supporting the D-Day invasion in 1944. He played for the Yankees from 1946 to 63. He actually initially did try out for the Cardinals in 1943, but he was kind of slow and kind of chunky, and so they kind of rejected him. And a Yankee scout recognized his potential and signed him. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1972. And again, he and Joe Garagiola were he also was a major league player and broadcaster. They were boyhood friends. And, Yogi was famous for saying things like, it ain't over till it's over. And one of the other things I think I heard this week was baseball is 90% mental, the other half is physical, things like that. But his wife once asked him where he wanted to be buried. Did he want to be buried in St. Louis or New York or Montclair, New Jersey? And his response to his wife was, I don't know, why don't you surprise me? Yogi Berra, dead at 90 this week. He will be missed. He was a fantastic baseball icon and St. Louis hometown boy. With that, I am out of here. I want to thank everybody for joining me today. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Where are the conservatives? Is there this week. Please go to theblacksphere.net. Not only myself, but lots of awesome, talented people are there, among Kevin Jackson, writing at theblacksphere.net. Please go there. Go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble. Twitter at Patriot Witch. Everyone have a fantastic week and weekend, and I will see you later.